This is James Robertson, Syncom Smalltalk Product Evangelist, bringing you another talk from the European Smalltalk Users Group meeting held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008.
Let's pretend that this is real. Let's say this real.
Here's Leandro Knigle giving his talk on user changes at ESUG 2008 in Amsterdam.
Let's start with what is this. This is the application of the company I work for. So I will create a new project. It's not necessary for you to pay attention to the application or anything there. To get the idea. This is just a new empty project. So I will, as an end user, start issuing some commands. For instance, I will create here an object, and below this, some other object. And I will, for instance, duplicate this one, and move this from here to here. So, every command I perform gets registered in a user changes log. I created, there are some actions, I created the first object named R, the second was W below R, then I duplicated R, and then I moved the first, second object to the second, to the copy. So this is similar to what happens when you do some programming in Smalltalk and the changelog captures all your, the methods you create or change, class, additions, removals, renamings. So what we are doing is using the same ideas and techniques to capture end user changes. What's the difference between logging, programmer changes, and end user changes? The difference is that as a programmer, I have, I don't know, a dozen of commands. I can create a method, remove a method, create a class, remove a class. It's a very limited set of possibilities that is also pretty stable. It's the same from, has been the same, essentially the same number of commands or decades. In an application, there are thousands of commands. And applications evolve all the time, so we are removing and adding new commands almost every day. So it's not that easy, but the same techniques prove to be adequate. So, because of your experience with the Smalltalk changelog, I will try to show you how this works in general. So, in general, what happens is that through the GUI, in the GUI, we have panes. Every pane has a model. So this is a pane, which is composed of other panes. There is a model here. So the technique we use is to add a wrapper around the model. The wrapper will capture any user change. So if the user comes and changes the model, the pane will treat the wrapper thinking it is not a wrapper, but it's model, the actual model. So we'll send a message, the message corresponding to the command to the wrapper without knowing that this is a wrapper. This wrapper now will ask if the change actually changes the model, because when the user is just looking or browsing the application, the pane is asking for names or values of variables, many things that are commands but don't change anything. So we have to remove them and just capture those commands that change the model. So if that command happens to change the model, we log this. This simple, and the programmer is almost 100% transparent. The programmer doesn't pay attention to anything of this mechanism because the wrapper makes all of this transparent.
Is this a generic wrapper or specialized for the
It's specialized for this application, but this wrapper, we will see more detail this thing. So, after logging the change, the message is sent to the repeat. So, let's view this in more detail. We have a GUI, and the GUI sends a message to the wrapper. The wrapper generates here, has the opportunity to generate the change, to transform the message into a change. Then we validate the change because we want to make sure that we will be able to replay the change later. So this validation is mostly for debugging purposes. If it doesn't validate, then the programmer knows that the mechanism is not working very well in this particular case, and it requires some attention here. If it validates, we store the change, which is now an object, into a list of changes, the change log, which is another option. And of course, we then send the message to the model. The interesting thing is that these changes can be sent to a text file using the same regular chunk format for file out. This is important because later we will be able to use the regular file in command to load the changes back into the system. Let's see the structure of a change. Here we need something more elaborated because there are thousands of changes, so we have to pay attention to the structure of how we are going to capture every change. A change is essentially a message with some more information. It has a timestamp because it's good to know when the changes happen. It has an author and the selector of the message, the name of the receiver, and not the receiver because we want to transform this in text. No. These are the changes that an end user will get by using the application. So for instance, here, this change, if we inspect the change, it has a timestamp, the user, the name of the receiver, the selector I use, some arguments. No. This is, I'm trying to explain the model I'm using, how it is implemented.
That's really for the object.
So, well, the important thing here is I said something about validation. I'm always talking about validations. So here there are many validations, but the most important ones are the timestamp is not nil, the author name is not empty, we have actually a selector for the message. The name of the receiver can be resolved into the actual object, and that receiver, once resolved, can respond to the command or the selector, and we have the required number of arguments. This is a change that validates. Okay? And we will associate every change to the change log to give the change some context in order to replay it later. I said not the object, but the name of the object. So one requirement for this framework is you need to be able to name objects in a way that then you can retrieve the objects from their names. Of course, you are not going to name all objects in your systems, just the main objects that are the root in the GUI, because those objects are exposed to user commands, and these are the only ones that need to be resolved. But a resolution mechanism is, I don't know, you have some structure or branch or network of objects, so you have to identify some path to have the full path from the root to the object. For instance, here the path is object A, B2, C2 from the root R. I'm not going to provide more details on naming objects, but I think that is something that everybody can understand very well. So, the wrapper. Someone asked me about the wrapper. The wrapper is an instance of a class that has no superclass, like conventional wrappers, and has two instance variables, the RP and the changelog, where the wrapper is reporting. And it contains all the commands that the user can issue through the GUI. So this class has, I don't know, 1,000 methods. Okay? All the commands that that users can issue from by using the GUI. So it's not very elegant to have one class with 1,000 methods. But actually these methods are automatically written by the mechanism. They are not written by the programmer. And all of them are similar. As a wrapper, we use, or these objects use, the does not understand mechanism. Assume that a programmer creates a new GUI for some model. So the first time someone uses the GUI, a new command is sent to the model. If the wrapper does not understand that command because the programmer didn't write the method, then does not understand will be sent. Okay? At that moment, the framework will ask whether it should be a change for that method. This is the question about whether the command is changing something in the model or not. If it should build a method, then builds the method, and then sends the message. So, using does not understand, we are adding all the methods to this class. The interesting thing, at least to me, is that only one wrapper, only one class for all the wrappers, for any possible model in any possible application is enough. You don't have to reproduce a part of your model class hierarchy with wrappers. Only one suffices. Let's see an example. For instance, here I have this option. So I will rename this to a different thing, okay? So I click here and rename R to R, I don't know, A. So if I come here, I will find the rename to command captured in the changes log, okay? So what happened is that this method in the wrapper class was used. Now assume that we are going to rename for the first time, so we don't have this method. Okay? If we rename again, then the wrapper will not understand rename to. So it will create the method I just removed. like this. Come here and rename this back to her or anything. So, this is the question. Is this command changing anything? Yes, it's changing the name. So I, as a programmer, answer this with yes. So if I come back here to the class and I refresh this, I should find this one created without typing. Yes, please.
The dialogue machine, is that what should build method?
The dialogue is, yes, exactly.
Does should build method, does it do more, or does it only show that dialogue?
No, that's a lot of things because it only asks, there's many rules to know when the question doesn't make any sense. There are selectors that you know don't change anything.
Okay, you already have black whistles.
Yeah. Okay. So here is essentially the method that this has created. So, look now at the structure of the classes we have been used. We had one class for the wrapper, one class for the change, one class for the change log, which is a list of changes, and there are some relationships, and one class for the validator, okay? Which is not essential, but is important. So, only four classes. One of them created almost automatically, and the other one are very easy, very simple, give a lot of functionality because we can now capture and replay any change made by the user. So this is simple and very powerful. So how we replay changes? Let's show this. I will save these changes in file. Okay. Now I will start a new project. An empty one. This is empty. So I now will try to replay the changes here they are. So I select, for instance, this one, and I apply the change, validated, it's okay. So when I come here, I can see the option. Okay? Now, if I try to apply the same again, in this particular case, because this is creating an object with a name, if I try to apply it again, it should fail because it's creating another object with the same name, so we will have a name collision. So this validation is needed here, so when I apply for the second time, it's rejected, okay? But if I apply them all, then I get again what I had in the first time. Please.
Do you use the same for undo actions also?
Yes. We will see. This is in the part of applications. Undo, which is actually only redo, but redo all commands, which is sort of undo, is an important application. So here we have we had a text file with all the changes in the usual chunk format, so we can use the usual filein to transform them in objects that are changes. Then we can create a change, connect to the change log that gives them some context, and validate the change. If not, we tell the user, if yes, we execute the change. This is the replay. The performance here is very simple. I will skip that. It's just, remember that the change is essentially a message with more things. So once you recover the message, you execute the message. So the important part here for me is the applications. Because over the years, we discovered that the applications were a lot. Not just recover from disaster. So, first, of course, the recovery log, okay? All the time, save every change on disk. So the user types in things or move the mouse, does things, and every change is registered in the recovery log. Audited. Your system can show the users who changed what, when, and how, because you can read the changes. because of the Smalltalk syntax. It's very simple. Here is a local redo. You can redo commands, and you can do a little bit more. For instance, you can, from all the changes, you concentrate in one object in the GUI. I will show you an example. Then filter all changes and select it just those that are related to this object and show them in the main menu. For instance, if I come here and say not 10 but 12, and not I don't know this format but 3 decimals, and I don't know, and not just a number but a function, I changed my mind, I want a number. 0. What was the number? I come here and I recover the number. Okay? It's not undo, it's redo and all change. So I get here. I said, no, I changed my mind. I want the function. It was a complicated expression. So it's here. Not that complicated. Okay? So this is important. Scripting. All your changes are saved on a text file, on disk. So you could potentially edit that file and create, and you have a scripting language for your system. There are more applications. For instance, demos and tutorials. You can have the changes prepared with all the commands you want to perform in the demonstration, and then you can go and perform each of them in sequence. So there will be no surprises in your talk. This is more interesting. Our back compatibility issues. Software it changes all the time, but you have to preserve back compatibility and be able to load models saved in all versions. This is takes a lot of resources. So sometimes it's easier to reload all changes than to migrate the model. At least it's another possibility in case the migration has some bug in some particular case. Merging. Merging objects. Not every application needs to merge objects, but those applications that need to merge objects have probably a hard time because merging objects is a difficult operation, but merging changes is not. User support. I have a client with a problem. Sorry. The client sends me the model because it needs help. I solve the problem. But if it takes me, I don't know, a couple of days to solve the problem. When I send back the model, the user will have their own work in the model. My model, there is a synchronization problem. So instead of sending the user back all the model, I can send just the changes I introduced to the model. So this is help. So solve the user problem and send back the changes, not the whole thing. More applications. Bug reporting. Instead of saying, I was doing this and that bad thing happened, send me the changes. I will repeat and reproduce the bug. I did something, I don't remember what, but the system crashed. Okay, you don't remember. Look at the changes, or something the changes. Testing. New programmers have to understand how to write unit tests because they still don't know the model, the software. So they can use the software as end user. This will generate changes with messages, selectors. They will immediately get very good clues how where to browse, where to go, where to put a halt. Okay? Progression. Of course, unit testing is essential. The problem is it's not enough. You have to do much more testing, more traditional testing. And you have to run other kind of tests from time to time. So progression is important. So if you have more traditional testing, you have a beta tester doing things in your application, this session of testing will generate a file with all the changes. So if the beta tester keeps the file, then it will be very easy to replay the file automatically And you have a library of files that can be used to test these new versions of the software. Learning, well, when I explain testing, I actually explain learning. It's the changes give programmers that have no knowledge of the system where to add a halt. In the testing, what I mean was different. Is the user or the beta tester sends a set of changes that generate a bug. So that by replaying them, I reproduce the bug. But I can do more. I can copy this and write the test unit, reproducing exactly the case and have the test. There are some more applications. For instance, metrics. You can count the number of commands that users can perform, because these are all the methods of the class in the class of the wrapper. This is very important. You can estimate how many keystrokes the user requires, because keystrokes are in the arguments of the commands. So if you count the number of letters or numbers in the arguments of all the commands, you can know how many keystrokes the user had to type in to get that object. So you can measure productivity. You can measure dedication as well, because you have all this, the name of the author and the timestamp. So you can see when this guy worked on this project, for how long, so user behavior. Also, you can track the areas of your software that are most used, the more popular, the most popular. Understand users' workflow, discover bad practice patterns by end users. There are many research behind this. Some other application, teamwork. You have several people working on the same software without a client server thing, just copies of the application. Okay, you can then combine the changes into an official version of the model. Database conflict. You are using Jameson, you do some changes and then you commit and there is a conflict with another session. You could bring all your changes and say, and take a look and replay them again, I don't know, many things. This is also interesting. Check in, check out. You now have the Jameson database and your notebook, you work here and download the project from the database to your laptop. Then you go home and do some work. When you are back in the office, then you can apply your changes back into the repository. Check in, check out. Now, these are things that if you use the software for some time, or not the software, these changes for some time, you will discover. But I wanted to show you other applications that we found were possible in our application, in this one. So I have a demo here. You can do this. Let me show you, probably here is better. Decision analysis is something that is having more interest in the business. So this, building tools for decision analysis is very important. For instance, what if scenarios? You have a model, but what if this parameter here is different? What would be different? So, how we could manage that? Okay, we could try to recreate a new project or object with that new value for the parameter and make some comparison, and then another one. So what's a good approach to having multiple copies of the same option? Good approach we found with changes is this. We have some object, the project is a base. Then we create a copy and we give the copy to the user. So the user, this copy is exactly the same as the original, but the user can start making, introducing changes to the copy, creating one scenario, okay? So the user changes this and creates some scenario that is similar to the original, but not exactly the same. So when the user is done creating that scenario, we forget the scenario, but keep the changes, okay? Which is should be small, a text file. So we store the changes, the first one. Then we repeat the same. We copy again as many times as the user wants. So we create another change set, and many scenarios that are variations of the same base model. But every scenario is a small text file made up of the changes. So this is a very cheap way to capture many scenarios of even big projects, because the size of the scenario is proportional to the number of changes. So how we now let the user recreate these scenarios? Well, we have all these changes. Every change set represents a possible scenario. So we again create a model of the base, and a copy of the base, and we locate some scenario from the list. For instance, number 3. So we apply now all these changes to the copy and generate the same scenario we had in the beginning in step 3. Okay? So it's very simple to save the changes and apply them later on the base. This is a very clean approach to having multiple scenarios. On top of this, of course, you want to show differences and results, many things, but the underlying structure is very simple, using changes. It has an important property, because if you change the base model, then, because you are going to apply your changes on a copy of the base model, the copies will inherit all the changes in the base model. So it's a way to propagate all the changes from the base to every scenario. This is very good. So if you change in the base, that change will be seen in every scenario. This is a very important thing that you don't have if you have several copies of the whole thing are disconnected. Now, between the base and each of these scenarios, there is a parent-child relationship. Because if I change the base, when I apply the changes, I will see the changes of the base in the scenario. So there is some dependency in the parent-child relationship. So if we have this relationship between the base and several scenarios, we could do something more, which is this. We have an object. So we copy the object and create this parent-child, like I explained. Now we create the second one. This is like having two scenarios, scenario A and scenario B. But now we can think of scenario B as the root. So we apply the same mechanism to the root, to this new root. So instead of having a flat structure of several scenarios from the main model, we can have a nested structure with the shape of a tree. So this is a decision tree, implemented in the same way as in the case of scenarios, but with a focus on a local node on the tree. So we create as many nodes as we want. So we can implement things like this one here. This node represents the base model, the project. Now the project has two scenarios. Some scenario with a high something and some other scenario with a low something. And then in the high we have some yes and some no. So this is a decision tree, please.
Do all the changes have to be in the same file for this view? Do you have to get all the changes?
No, if you you only need to a way to locate the changes. But in this specific implementation of this tool, we are using the same file for all of them. But this is an implementation in it.
So, but there's a follow-up question. What do we do to create new change files? And when do you close one off? How many do you end up with? You got gigabytes and terabytes of change files?
No, because you are, for this kind of application, you are creating very small changes. You have a project and you want to create two scenarios of that project. In this scenario you modify some few things, and in this scenario you modify some other few things. So just these small changes go to a file.
So I think but when do you throw changes away?
When you, well, never. There's no necessary. But what in our application what we do, but wait, probably I'm telling something in the way that you don't get the idea. Every project has their changes. You don't need to have only one file. Probably that was your question. It's not like in the changelog in Smalltalk where everything goes there. No, it's not like that. Every project has its own set of changes. Every scenario has its own set of changes. We have many changes. Many files with changes are individual. Okay? We are not using a big file for everything. So, here, and here for instance, in some scenario in this decision tree, so I can edit this. So, editing is copying the base and then applying the changes that, of that level. So I can here copy of the base to the changes. This is the way the users can go and create more copies, more scenarios, and throw away the copies and keep the changes for creating more scenarios and more decision trees. If we go back here, we can see also the changes of every scenario. Here, for instance, there's only one change. And no, if I go here, there's another change. And here is the comparison between the value of this parameter in this scenario and the value of the same parameter in the base. But the important thing is that by using applying changes and throwing away the copy of the model, you can play with the scenarios and implement very powerful tools for decision analysis. And you can add a lot of stuff here, but I wanted to tell you the main things. So we have scenarios, we have decision trees, we have Monte Carlo simulations. I won't be into the details, but if you run a simulation of a model where the scenarios are at random, then you can transform every iteration of your simulation into a change, and then because of that, into a scenario. So you can effectively edit every Monte Carlo iteration, and more than that, you can edit them all or some portion that is interesting to you with a scenario window where you can make comparisons and understand better the uncertainties in your project. Well, this is all. I wanted just to tell some inferences, because this is not that we are smart and came with a simple idea and implemented it in 10 minutes and we are happy and run into the flowers. I don't know. It's not like that. We have the Smalltalk changelog from the gates. I remember 10 years ago there was a quick error recorder by Dan Ingalls. Then Valeria worked on the second part of that error recorder. We wanted to show the morphic wrappers, so we sent a demo with an error recorder to Dan Ingalls, and he said, instead of saying, oh, the motor grabber, he said, oh, the motor grabber. Yes. It's time. It's perfect. That's all.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that talk from ESUG 2008, held in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, in August of 2008. If you did, head on over to syncomsmalltalk.com and check out the podcast area. We have a weekly podcast and lots more content where this came from. You can also send feedback to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. You can head on over to the Industry Misinterpretations group on Facebook, the Smalltalkers group at Ning. You can head on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. And of course, you can go to Podcast Alley and cast a vote for us.